You're listening to the micro version of the Savage Lovecast, www.savagelovecast.com.
If you're stuck in a relationship quandary, or if you're looking for sexual harmony, well, there's nothing you can't ask on the Savage Lovecast.
Stephen Ross, a billionaire that I'd never heard of before, is a real estate investor, and like a lot of billionaire real estate investors, Ross is the owner of many things. Office buildings, yachts, sports teams, businesses you may have heard of. Like a lot of billionaires, Ross is also a fan of Donald Trump's, because of course he is. Trump's tax cuts have made rich white men like Ross richer, and it's not like poor white men are leaving Trump rallies to go shoot up yacht clubs, right? Ross is such a big fan of Trump's that he hosted a fundraiser at his mansion in the Hamptons last Friday for Donald Trump's re-election campaign. It cost $100,000 to attend, $250,000 if you wanted to get a picture with Donald Trump and enjoy a private and very exclusive roundtable conversation with the president. Most people I know desperately want to hear less from Donald Trump, but apparently there are people out there who will pay $250,000 to hear more from him. The rich, they are different from you and me. Anyway, here's the interesting thing. Here's the thing that's trending on Twitter. In addition to the mansions, the yachts, the islands, the office buildings, the football teams, and who the fuck knows, the crates of Fabergé eggs or whatever else Stephen Ross owns, he owns the high-end, pricey Equinox chain of fitness centers. Gyms in gay neighborhoods, in other words. Related Co., Ross's company, owns Equinox and SoulCycle, two fitness companies that market themselves heavily to queer people, particularly to gay men. Both spent the month of June smearing themselves in rainbow whore paint because they want queer people in urban areas to think they support diversity, because that's good for their bottom line, which is good for their billionaire owner, which is good for Donald Trump, which is bad for queer people and immigrants, some of them queer, and black people, ditto, and hell, bad for the air we all have to breathe and the water we all have to drink and the planet we all have to live on. So, the man who owns the big gay gym supports a racist white supremacist who runs the federal government and is actively attacking and persecuting queer people at every opportunity, throwing trans people out of the military, pushing to make discrimination against gays and lesbians legal in employment and housing and adoption, so long as the bigot who wants to do the discriminating remembers to utter those magic words, sincerely held religious beliefs, before they get down to firing someone. There's been some pushback. Equinox's Instagram page has been flooded with negative comments, and gay men all over the country are pledging to cancel their memberships on Twitter, and I hope they follow through. Now, as anyone who's ever tried to cancel a gym membership knows, they don't make it easy. They make it hard. Which is why I want to draw your attention to someone who replied to Billy Eichner, the actor, who tweeted, "Hey, Equinox, what's your policy for canceling memberships once a member finds out your owner is enabling racism and mass murder?" A follower tweeted back at Eichner, "Point, gays, it's hard to get out of your Equinox membership contract unless you're injured or pregnant or moving. Counterpoint, gays, if you fuck in a steam room at Equinox and get caught, Equinox bans you for life." So hey, it turns out that canceling your Equinox membership isn't hard. Not if you are. Get on it, guys. All right, coming up on today's show on the micro edition of the Savage Lovecast, tons of your Q's, lots of my A's. And joining us on the Magnum subscription edition of the Savage Lovecast, comedian Jacqueline Novak, star of the hit off-Broadway show Get On Your Knees, joins us to talk all things blowjob. All that coming up on today's show. This episode of the Savage Lovecast is brought to you by Everlane, luxury basic clothing and accessories made at ethical factories without those retail markups. For free shipping and to support the Lovecast, go to everlane.com/savage. Me Undies makes feel-good underpants your butt will be proud to wear and you will be proud to be seen in. They will be the most comfortable pair of underwear you will ever own, and to check it out yourself, go to MeUndies.com/savage. Support for today's show, support we are very grateful for, comes from Stamps.com. With Stamps.com, you can access all the amazing services of the post office right from your desk in your own home, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Just click, print, mail, and you are done. It could not be easier. And right now, use Savage for this special offer. Includes up to $55 worth of free postage, a digital scale, and a 4-week trial. Do not wait. Go to stamps.com, and before you do anything else, click on the microphone at the top of the homepage and type in Savage. That's stamps.com. Enter S-A-V-A-G-E.
Hi, Dan. East Coast straight female here. So quickly, I am twice divorced. Both my choice, pretty much. The second one got so bad that we really had to just get away from each other. So having been through that twice, and recovered fine. I think I'm better off for it. But I'm in a relationship now with someone I've been with for almost 2.5 years. And it's not really very heavy as far as, like, we don't live together, anything like that. But we do love each other. And we are happy together, very happy together, I think. I feel, I mean, we say we are. I truly believe we are. And this man is like, I have a connection with him like I've never had with anyone before. My problem is that I feel like, as time goes on, and as we get more maybe closer and maybe blend our lives together more, I'm really afraid of getting bored and losing interest. And I know there's got to be a way to somehow just not let that happen. And I don't want to let it happen again because I do really love this man. And even if I don't feel in love every day and I don't love everything about him or I don't think he's perfect every moment, I still want to stay with him because I think I have this tendency of jumping from relationship to relationship when I get bored. And I just want to know how I can possibly stop doing that in my life.
You might want to pick up, read last week's Savage Love, my advice column. I got a question from a woman who married young, married at age 21, and 7 years later, marriage is kind of in danger because she's fucking bored. And she feels guilty about this. She's really putting herself on the rack about it, wondering what's wrong with her. And I called in reinforcements, Wednesday Martin, frequent guest here on the Lovecast, author of Untrue, Why Nearly Everything We Believe About Women, Lost in Infidelity is Wrong, and How the New Science Can Set Us Free, to talk about this topic, that women in committed, long-term, sexually exclusive relationships, their desire for their partner drops off faster than a man's desire for his opposite sex partner in a similar relationship. Women get bored faster. So this crisis in low, no libido, this crisis in sexless marriages is really a crisis of female boredom. And we have a hard time acknowledging that because it runs contrary to everything that we're told that we ought to believe about women, that women are the ones who are more invested in monogamy, that women are the ones who are better at monogamy, that monogamy is what women want, and that kind of intimacy and security is what turns women on. And the science says no. And we haven't been studying these things for very long. Really, the field of sexology, research into sex, only got underway less than 100 years ago, and people only began to control for their cultural biases, control for sexism and patriarchy and misogyny a decade or two ago, and looking into female sexual desire response, pleasure. And so this is all recent. And a lot of people in the sex advice, marital advice, industrial complex aren't adjusting their advice. We come upon people in sexless marriages, opposite sex couples, and we tell him, oh, if you just do a little bit more housework, she'll want to fuck you. And we tell her, oh, if you just have a glass of wine, you'll want to fuck him. And it doesn't work because it's not getting at the problem, which is boredom. Now, when I say these things, people accuse me of advocating open relationships in all circumstances, that everybody should be in an open relationship, and that's how you address boredom. Well, that's one way you can address and control for boredom. Variety, excitement, danger of being in an open relationship. Yeah, that can solve your boredom problem. That's not the only way to solve your boredom problem, but you can't solve your boredom problem if you're incapable of even acknowledging that boredom is what's at the root here of your sexless marriage or your cratering of desire for your partner. That it's not the division of household labor, which should be fairly divided, regardless of who's getting fucked when and by whom. It's boredom. And we should tell opposite sex couples that they need to bear that in mind, that familiarity, intimacy, the siblingification of your relationship, you're going to have to push against that. So all of this, I think, is relevant to you, caller. Been divorced twice. The more intertwined your life gets with a male partner, the less desire you experience for that partner. And you're worried in your new relationship that this pattern will repeat. And I am here to tell you that this pattern will repeat if you make the same mistakes. What you're doing right now works. You are in an intimate relationship with this person. You have a connection. You love him. You don't fucking live together. Continue to not fucking live together. That is good advice for someone with your particular pattern and your particular problem, which is common to a lot of folks. The more intertwined your life becomes, the more intimacy, the more day-to-day intimacy, the more grind of intimacy, the less desire for the grind of the other kind that turns you on, the grinding of genitals together. So don't live together. And if you are going to live together, identify boredom as the mortal enemy to your relationship that it is, and link arms to combat it together. That doesn't mean you have to have an open relationship. That does mean that you have to be able to say, I'm bored. We've been doing the same thing in the same way, in the same place for a while now. We need to shake this up. Not because there's anything wrong with you, not because there's anything wrong with me, but because there's going to be something wrong with our relationship soon if we don't go on sexual adventures together that do not necessarily have to involve other people, but could, so we don't get bored. I think boredom has been the problem in your past relationships. What can keep your current relationship exciting? That's the conversation you need to have with your partner. Exciting over the long term. What will do that? Public sex. Don't have to have sex with other people, but public sex environments, sex clubs, swingers parties. A lot of people go to those things just to have sex with each other. They just like to be in that eroticized environment. That can fuel your fire. Getting out of the house, fucking at work, exploring your kinks and fantasies together, watching porn together. What are you going to do proactively together as a couple to combat the boredom that has undermined your previous relationships and you worry will undermine this relationship? So this is my assignment for you. This is the homework. Go to your partner and be honest about who you are and what you know of yourself based on your experiences in the past and your two divorces. That when you get bored, you get itchy, and you will consciously or subconsciously begin to sabotage the relationship to bring excitement back into your life. So excitement in your life. That is a project that you two are going to work on together. Excitement in your life, excitement in his life. You are going to have sexual adventures. How are you going to do that? How are you going to do that together so that you don't wind up in divorce court a third time?
Hey, Dan, I'm a 41-year-old male from Philadelphia. I'm an avid listener of your show. I'm calling in. I've got a dump fucker already question. I've been involved with a woman for almost 5 years now. We have a 3-year-old. And each day that goes by, I realize I am living with a narcissist. Everything is about her, Dan. She frequently quits jobs. She drinks heavily. She's really mean. We have a 3-year-old, and that is the only thing holding me here in the house. You know, it's tough being a guy and being in a situation where you feel like you're being taken advantage of, even borderline being abused. But need some advice, Dan. I mean, what should I do here? I don't want to abandon my child, and she has promised to put up a heck of a fight. But I don't want to live in misery anymore either. I mean, should I just dump this woman and move on and try to figure it out from there? Should we try counseling or, someone that's such a narcissist? I mean, will that even work?
When people say you should try counseling, they usually mean you should try counseling. Maybe counseling will help save the relationship. But you can also see a counselor to negotiate the end of a relationship, to have someone act as the facilitator, the referee, as you talk about how you are going to terminate this relationship, how you're going to divorce if you're married, or how you're going to separate or move out if you're not married, in as amicable a fashion as possible. So yes, I would encourage you to try a little counseling, but what you need to do with the counselor, not negotiate the terms of your surrender, but negotiate the terms of your release. And the person who needs to be the focus of this conversation, really your first priority and your narcissistic partner's first priority, is your child. Now, a narcissist can be vengeful. Narcissists often take hostages, and you are in a terrible situation where the obvious hostage your partner can take if they are abusive and terrible is this child, and your partner may attempt to use this child as a lever to control you and keep you in the relationship by threatening to abuse the child, threatening to limit your time or access to this child, which is another way of abusing that child. And you then have to be prepared to march into court, sue for custody, or have the custody arrangement hammered out in court. You got to be prepared for that. And I don't mean just psychologically prepared for that. I mean prepared for that. You need to be documenting now your partner's abusive behavior. You need to make notes after your counseling sessions about how they go. You need to write down the things your partner says to you. If your partner threatens the child or you, or threatens to cut off access to the child, if you should leave her, write all those things down. Share those things contemporaneously, as they say, with people in your support network, with friends and family, and with the counselor you'll be seeing. Really sorry, this is a terrible position to be in. You should dump the motherfucker already, but you need to do it in a careful and conscientious way so as to protect this child and the best interests of this child. And I think it's in the best interest of this child that you try counseling, not to save the relationship, but to wind it down as peacefully as possible. MeUndies is here to change your underwear. Not literally, but they're here to change the way you think about your underwear. They believe undies should be soft, fit every booty like it was made for every booty, and offer fun patterns that give you the freedom to express yourself. MeUndies also believes that every woman should have the freedom to wear whatever cut they want and whatever size they want. So, ladies, rejoice. The Feel Free collection is here. MeUndies size tested these 5 new silhouettes on every body type. With an ultra-soft, feather-light waistband that provides zero restriction, these undies will be the best thing that ever happened to your booty. Offered in sizes extra small to 4XL, new prints drop every Tuesday, so undie exhaustion will be gone forever. Personally, I love my MeUndies pajama bottoms. I am in them every night. It's the first thing I do when I get home. I pull them on. They are so soft. They are so comfortable. I'm legitimately addicted to them. Also, gotta say, MeUndies don't just feel great on your booty, they feel great in your hands when they're on someone else's booty. There's more than one way to experience and enjoy the softness and pleasure of wearing MeUndies. MeUndies also has a great offer for my listeners. For any first-time purchasers, you get 15% off and free shipping. This is a no-brainer, especially because they have a 100% satisfaction guarantee. To get 15% off your first pair, free shipping, 100% satisfaction guarantee, and to support the Savage Lovecast, go to MeUndies.com/savage. That's MeUndies.com/savage.
I'm 33, female, living abroad, and I have a question about a classmate. So me and my friends were mature students who just recently graduated with our master's degrees. And one of our classmates is sending us the oops, sorry, I texted you that messages. So it happened to me once where it was about how him and somebody else are waiting for a third person to come to the bedroom. So oops, sorry, ignore that. And he sent to another friend, another woman, asking a mysterious person something a little bit more salacious and then saying, oops, sorry about that message. So then most recently, he sent it to a third of our classmates who he just sent a photo of himself wearing women's underwear with, of course, the message, sorry, please ignore. And that's the most recent. It's been going on for about a year and a half or so now. And we're just wondering, how do we respond to this? So far, we've been ignoring it. I sent one little message back that said, haha, you know, sorry, I'm not going to be joining you in the bedroom or something. But it seems to become kind of a trend and is getting a little bit weird and a bit, and it's escalating a bit. And we're just wondering what's the best way to respond, if we should respond at all, and is this dangerous behavior?
To send one stray text or sext message like that just once may be regarded as carelessness. Continue to send straight text messages like that? Yeah, you're doing that shit on purpose. I once sent a text to a family member that wasn't intended for that family member. And I promise you, I have never made that mistake again. I am so hypervigilant when I text people now, particularly if I am including an image, because that was such a searing, scarring experience. And it wasn't a picture. It was just a stray thought. This asshole is doing this on purpose. You all know he's doing this on purpose, and he's relying on your sense of decorum and this natural human sort of empathetic instinct not to embarrass or humiliate someone else, which allows people who are dirtbags to be manipulative shits, to do things that embarrass and humiliate us, but then we hesitate to be direct with them for fear of embarrassing and humiliating them. Well, I don't think this person can be embarrassed or humiliated. This person is sending messages out to female friends and colleagues intentionally, and you guys got to push back. Block the motherfucker. Block his number. Tell him that you are going to complain to his employer if he's using a work phone number, to his partner if he's partnered. This is not okay. What he's doing is harassment. And there is a pattern here. I think this actually can happen by accident, that you can send a text or you can send a pic to someone you didn't intend to send it to. That happens. That happens once. That doesn't happen again and again and again and again, from my own personal experience. So he's doing this on purpose, and you and everyone else that he's done this to needs to blow up at him about it, needs to scream at him about it, and needs to tell him that you have spoken, all of you have spoken to each other, and you know that this is a pattern with him, and it's not an accident. And if there's someone that you can complain to about it, you are all going to go complain to that person about it. Again, is it a work phone number that he's sending these from? Is he using work email to send these things? Does he have a partner who's unaware that he's harassing their friends, their shared friends, their common friends with these messages? You say that he and his partner were looking for a third or waiting for a third. Does she know he's doing this to their female acquaintances? If she doesn't, I bet she would be interested to know. And then there might be consequences for this asshole. No one has time for the post office. You're busy. Who's got time for all that traffic, parking, lugging all your mail and packages? Going to the post office is a real but avoidable hassle, and you can avoid it with Stamps.com, one of the most popular time-saving tools out there for small businesses. Stamps.com eliminates trips to the post office and saves you money with discounts you can't even get at the post office. Stamps.com brings all the amazing services of the U.S. Post Office right to your computer. Whether you're a small office sending invoices, an online seller shipping out products, or even a warehouse sending thousands of packages a day, Stamps.com can handle it all with ease. Simply use your computer to print official U.S. postage 24/7 for any letter, any package, any class of mail, anywhere you want to send. Once your mail is ready, you just hand it to your mail carrier or drop it in a mailbox. It is that simple. With Stamps.com, you get 5 cents off every first-class stamp and up to 40% off priority mail. Not to mention, it's a fraction of the cost of those expensive postage meters. Stamps.com is the way to go, saving you time and money. It's no wonder over 700,000 small businesses are already using Stamps.com. And right now, my listeners get a special offer that includes a 4-week trial plus free postage and a digital scale without any long-term commitment. Just go to stamps.com, click on the microphone at the top of the homepage, and type in Savage. That's stamps.com. Enter Savage.
Hi, Dan. I'm a 34-year-old straight male, and I've been having an issue with my libido. Until I was about 28 or 29, I would get horny enough that I felt a strong need to masturbate at least once a day. I find now that I'm 34, I almost am never horny, and I can go weeks without masturbating. To an extent, I'm no longer even interested in porn. In the moment with a partner, I can get turned on, but it's almost like I need to be activated. The only time I feel intensely aroused without that activation is when I smoke a ton of weed. Another piece, I've been dealing with depression since I was a teenager, though in the past year I've been coming out of it. Is my brain permanently damaged due to the depression, or is this age-related and I should just accept this as my new normal? I'm wondering if there's anything I can do.
If you're taking meds to treat your depression, and congrats on coming out of it, most of those meds have side effects that can crater people's libidos. That's well known. It's also something to discuss with your therapist or your counselor, the doctor, whoever's prescribing these meds for you, because you can try different meds. And some meds crater, you know, person A's libidos, and those same meds don't crater person B's libidos. So shifting from med to med until you find the one that helps to treat your depression without cratering your libido, that's a legitimate reason to shake up your meds, to try some new meds. If you're not taking meds, but you're seeing someone to talk about your depression, you need to talk about this. If it distresses you, does it distress you? You've noticed that you don't get as horny these days as you used to. You're 34 years old. You're not 16 years old. That is a normal part of aging. What you described, though, doesn't sound typical. And please don't confuse normal and typical. It doesn't sound typical. Most men who are 34 years old still take healthy interest in porn, are still masturbating at a pretty regular clip. You aren't. The question for you is, are you happy? Is this distressing you? The fact that you are masturbating less, thinking about sex less, watching less porn than you used to. If this is just your new normal, if this is a plateau that you've landed on for a while and it's not distressing you, it's not a problem. But if it's distressing you, then it's something to talk about with your therapist. And if you're on meds, it's definitely something to talk about with your therapist. Would you buy a t-shirt for $50 if you knew it only cost $7 to make? We wouldn't. With Everlane, you won't have to, because with Everlane, you never overpay for quality clothes. Everlane only makes premium essentials using the finest materials without traditional markups. And they want you to know what you're paying for and why. So Everlane tells you their real costs, and they are radically transparent about every step in their process, from the materials they use to the ethical factories they work with. No matter your style or preference, Everlane's clothes look better, cost less, and last longer. Because Everlane sells directly to you, their prices are 30 to 50% lower than traditional retailers. Essentials like their Cotton Crew t-shirt are exactly what they should be. Versatile, simple, stylish, and made from quality materials that you did not overpay for. They have a beautiful selection of 100% grade A cashmere. I love their premium Japanese denim, and Nancy especially loves their outerwear made from recycled water bottles. Check out our personalized collection at everlane.com/savage. Plus, you will get free shipping on your first order. That's everlane.com/savage. Everlane.com/savage.
Hi, Dan. I have a question about my responsibility while dating someone in a don't ask, don't tell open relationship. So I've been seeing this guy for a couple months, and he's sort of here just for the summer, in my state just for the summer. He lives out of state. He has a longtime girlfriend who he lives with out of state. And he told me when we met that they had an open relationship. I sort of asked him a little bit more about that, as someone sort of interested in the different ways non-monogamy looks. And he explained to me that it's a don't ask, don't tell relationship. He just does his best to kind of keep it out of her face. All good, whatever. So anyway, we keep hanging out, and he has some friends in the state that I live in. And so a couple times we sort of overlapped with the friends, and every time we overlap, he gets super squirrely and weird, and like sort of makes these weird comments to me about like, oh, I don't like PDA and that kind of thing, as if he doesn't want his friends to have any idea that we're sleeping together, which is also fine. These friends don't know his partner super well. I think they do overlap from time to time. But I guess I'm wondering, do you think this means that it's maybe not a don't ask, don't tell relationship? Maybe she's not as aware of it as he thinks she is. And I guess I wonder what my level of kind of responsibility in digging into that and trying to figure out if that's accurate or not I have as the sort of other person in this situation. Anyway, just curious what your thoughts are. Thanks.
A lot of people who are in DADT, don't ask, don't tell, open relationships, are invested in what's known as being socially monogamous. They want to be perceived to be monogamous by friends, by family, by neighbors, by coworkers. And engaging in PDA with your piece on the side, with your piece for the summer, with your secondary partner, in front of mutual friends, isn't just potentially a form of telling because they might ask her about this other woman, but it could be a violation of the, you know, mutual investment in socially monogamous perceptions. So it makes a kind of reasonable, rational sense that he might not be comfortable engaging in PDA with you in front of mutual friends, not just because they might blab to her, but because it violates that whole let's maintain the facade of being sexually monogamous aspect of the DADT or the open relationship. Particularly, a lot of straight people are very invested in social monogamy, being perceived to be monogamous, even if they're not. So his discomfort with PDA is not in and of itself proof that he's lying to you about being in a DADT relationship. That said, it's a lot easier to lie to someone about being in a DADT relationship. It's a lot easier for people who are cheating on their partners to bamboozle someone with, it's totally okay for me to sleep with other people, but they're never allowed to find out. I have to be incredibly discreet, almost as discreet as someone who's cheating. And in a way, a DADT relationship is a kind of permissible cheating. And it involves, almost hardwired into the agreement, a little bit of deception and a little bit of lying. If you have a don't ask, don't tell relationship and you're going to get together with your piece on the side and your partner, out of town or in town, asks you where you are, they've in a sense told you in advance that they'd rather be lied to, a white lie, than to be told straight up the truth. And that makes a lot of people uncomfortable with DADT relationships. The dissembling that isn't at the heart of it, because it's still an honest, open relationship, but the dissembling that makes it possible. So if you're uncomfortable, if you're worried that you're being played, that you're being lied to, in addition to his girlfriend being lied to, you can drill down on that. Tell me why I can't touch you in front of these people. If you're in an open relationship and it's DADT, how is being publicly affectionate in front of these folks who don't spend that much time with your girlfriend in violation of your DADT arrangement? And then see what he says. And you may hear, my girlfriend doesn't want anyone to know that we are open. She wants people to believe that we are monogamous, including all of her friends. Don't embarrass me in front of my friends is often something someone who's agreed to a DADT relationship tells their partner. Don't embarrass me in front of my friends. I won't embarrass you in front of your friends. So what you perceive to be evidence of a violation could, from another angle, and could potentially legitimately be his efforts to honor the agreement he's made with his girlfriend.
Hi, Dan. I've been with my husband for 7 years, and we are deeply in love. We are super compatible. Sexually, I have a slightly more intense libido than he does, and we have had some openness in our relationship, but really, I really prefer to be with him. The reason why I'm calling is because he does this thing in his sleep where he sort of just emerges out of sleep and is super, super horny and willing to do anything. And it's almost like an alter ego. And I can take advantage of it. And, you know, we can have a really, really good time. And then he kind of just like falls back into sleep and then doesn't remember anything in the morning. And I've taken advantage of it sometimes, but I don't always take advantage of it because I kind of feel weird, like I'm taking advantage in a bad way. So I guess my question for you is this common? Is this something that people do? Is this, I don't know, is it weird? What should I do?
You don't mention how your husband feels about these middle-of-the-night fuck sessions that he doesn't remember. Have you talked to him about it?
Yeah, he just laughs about it.
Okay, so there's no problem here then. You're not taking advantage of him.
No, but it just feels weird. It feels like, well, I am taking advantage in for better or for worse, right?
But that's what our husbands are there for to some extent, to be taken advantage of consensually and in a way that strengthens the relationship and the bonds that exist. And so,
yeah
you're taking advantage. You know, I take advantage of Terry when he's horny. Luckily for me, he's not asleep when he's horny. And that would be something I would be concerned about addressing with him. You know, sexomnia is a thing. There are people out there who have sex in their sleep. And some people aren't bothered by that so long as they're not initiating sex in their sleep with someone who does not want to have sex with them. That's when it can get really problematic. There's been cases of sexual assault committed by people who are fast asleep, and some of them have been acquitted because there was no intent, right? There was just sexomnia and initiation and bad shit, unfortunate shit. I don't want to dwell on that. Because that's not the case here. Your partner sometimes gets horny in his sleep and you're there and he is totally down with you seizing the advantage at those moments and fucking the shit out of him or letting him fuck the shit out of you.
Yeah, I think it's just what weirds me out about it is that there is no memory of it. So it's almost like just an experience for me which is weird because that's not how I think about sex. I think about sex as this transactional thing that hopefully is so great that you can even talk about it later mm-hmm. and replicate. Whereas this is just like, it's like, I don't know. It'd be like being in a self-driving car. You just don't really know like where you're going.
But you can talk about it later because you can talk about it with him. You don't have to keep these encounters secret from your husband. You can share all the dirty details in the morning of all the dirty cockhound things he did with you in the middle of the night when he was sort of asleep.
Oh, and I do. I do.
So, you know, I appreciate that you're being thoughtful about this. I don't want to discourage people with your particular problem from thinking about it, from wringing their hands a little bit, from checking in with their partners, making sure that their partners are okay with it, and being okay with it yourself and figuring out a way that you can be okay with it yourself. If indeed you regard sex as a connection that you're forging, not necessarily transactional, but you want to feel connected to your partner, and to feel connected to your partner, you'd like them to be conscious.
Yeah.
And that's not setting the bar too high.
Yeah.
It's not the only sex you have with him, right? You don't only have sex when he's asleep.
No, but I'd say that it's the most uninhibited because, well, he couldn't be more uninhibited. It's like there's zero inhibitions, which is why this is so strange because it's not quite like that when he's awake. even talking about it's weird. It's like when he's awake.
When he's awake. Well, thank God that you're his partner and he is safe with you. And you welcome this contact. You know, again, there are people with sexomnia who initiate sex, even with partners that their partners do not want to engage in. And you guys click even when he's asleep.
Yeah, so that's great. And clicking is not the problem. It's not even a problem. I was more so just curious about whether this was common and or whether you'd even heard about it before. Obviously you have. And so it was more of, it's less of a problem, more of just a curious thing because I've talked about it with lots of my friends and nobody's ever experienced it other than me.
The last thing I would encourage you to address with your partner, not to shame him about the sex he has with you when he's fully conscious, but the fact that he's much less inhibited in the middle of the night when he may be dreaming or asleep and initiating sex with you, you would like to get there when he's conscious and maybe there's a way there. We've already recommended pot on the show to somebody else. Going to recommend a little bit of pot for your partner, perhaps, you know, a mild edible, a puff, not blazed out of his mind, not near unconscious when he's trying to have sex with you awake, but something that can take the edge off his inhibitions. Because it would be really discomforting, I think, to be with somebody who the sex was better when they weren't awake for it.
Yeah, we do smoke pot, and we do. It's not that don't get me wrong. It's not that our sex is inhibited terribly. It's just that I'd say, I don't know, somewhere around 15% more wild in the middle of the night, and maybe that's also because it's inherently spontaneous because it happens it's the most spontaneous, happens in a flash, and then you're going, and so. I'm not sure if we can ever, we never seem to have that exact spontaneity, but maybe that's just because of the nature of waking up to that, right?
Yeah, maybe. Well, I'm glad you two came together into this relationship because it sounds like he's safe with you when he's asleep, and it sounds like you're down for him when he is also asleep but wanting to fuck you.
Yeah,
or
it's
fuck
pretty
around
great.
With you.
Yeah.
So what could, you know, I don't want to downplay the fact that this could be a problem in a different relationship, or this could become a problem for you if it increases in frequency or it begins to happen at times when you are not particularly receptive and there's no way to shut it down. Sexomnia can definitely be a problem. It is not at the moment a problem for you guys. And I think you should address it as a problem if it becomes one, but not.
And otherwise just take advantage.
Enjoy.
All right. I'll do that.
Good luck.
Thanks, Dan.
Talk to you later. Bye.
Hey, Dan. I'm 23 years old, calling from the East Coast. I'm a cis woman that's been in a relationship with a cis man for 3 years. And I have some social media woes that might be petty, and I want to hear your thoughts on them. So my partner is super active on social media, especially on Instagram. Posts a lot about his work, a lot about his goals, a lot about, you know, whenever he has cute pictures of himself, and it's a great Instagram page. Like, I remember being on Tinder. That's where I saw him, looking at his Instagram and really being like, wow, this dude's pretty cool. And ever since we started dating, we've gone to a lot of places together and took a lot of pictures together. And none of the pictures really show me. Like, he'll post a picture and it'll be like me giving my back or me just like not really in the frame. But he'll talk about, he even posted a picture with my dog when he came to visit my parents in my hometown, but never posted a picture about me, and posts pretty much weekly. So this bothers me. And then one time, the only time I ever posted a picture of both of us together was when we went to a trip. We left the country and took some pictures. His mom expressed to me wanting some pictures. And when I posted them, he erased them. So after that, naturally, I found out that he cheated on me pretty much the month that I posted the pictures. So it hurt a lot. He still has expressed wanting and showed me with his actions that he wants to stay together. And we've been talking about being open, particularly me, because I'm bisexual and he hasn't gone down to me in 7 months. And I want some of that, but I'm still not ready for him to see other people. I don't know if that's me being too selfish. Is it too petty to be upset about these social media things? Or does it reflect the larger issue, which is his lack of being able to be in a committed, loving relationship?
Instagram is his dating app. It's how you found your way to him, or you found your way to his Instagram profile pretty quickly after finding him on some other app. And it's what lured you in. I know a lot of people who are in committed, stable, loving, healthy relationships who met via Instagram. And everything that you've said in this call makes it clear that your boyfriend is shaking the Instagram tree. He is putting himself out there on Instagram and interacting with other women in the hopes of getting into their pants. And so it would be inconvenient for him to have a girlfriend who's part of his public profile on his Instagram page. Even you posting a picture of him, he deleted that link. He deleted his name from it. He deleted his handle from your Instagram post. That's something that you can do on Instagram. Somebody else puts you up on Instagram, they at you. You can go on Instagram and remove that at of yourself. It's a good feature. And he did that because, come on, open your eyes. He did that because he doesn't want any of the other women that he's talking with on Instagram to know that you exist, because he wants to be perceived as single and available, even if technically he isn't, or you don't think he should be, but he is. Don't be naive. I know you're young, but you're being kind of willfully naive or obtuse about this. You need some girlfriends. You need some girlfriends that you can talk to, not shitty girls who want to pour poison in your ear and aren't underminers, but girls with some common sense, girls that you can bat these things around with, who can say to you, honey, girlfriend, he's a player. He's a player. That might be all right. You say you're talking about possibly having an open relationship. What's on the table, or what you're thinking about right now, is an open relationship for you, but not for him, because you're bi. But he's already keeping his options, if not his legs, open. And I think, seeing as you're both young and you both have a lot to learn, you particularly, that you might want to just end this relationship and move on a little wiser than you were before you got into this relationship. All right, before we get to your response calls, let's read some tweets, with and without tweets. If you listen to the Savage Lovecast backwards, it's just fake Dan Savage giving people terrible advice and causing them to enter problematic relationships, which is why you shouldn't listen to my program backwards. Thomas Carver tweets, I've got to disagree with the listener on the Savage Lovecast who suggested handcuffs to the woman with bondage anxiety. Those can hurt if you struggle against them. Instead, I'd suggest Velcro wristbands at Fort Trough has a great set. I want to second that. Handcuffs are terrible beginner bondage items for beginners at bondage because they can hurt your wrist. They can damage nerves. People have it in their heads that buying bondage gear is kinkier than buying handcuffs. And maybe that's true. Maybe it makes you look a bit more like a perv if you've got actual bondage gear, but you're less likely to hurt someone or get hurt yourself engaging in bondage play if you invest in some decent bondage gear. And handcuffs ain't it. Rebecca Goldstein tweets, caller with the boyfriend cheating on her on Grindr. Stop sleeping with homophobes. Closeted or not, A, what message are you sending to the gay people in your life by dating an outward homophobe? B, they will be a misogynist too, because homophobia and misogyny are linked. Yes, indeed they are. Homophobia is misogyny's snot-nosed little brother, which is why I've long urged women not to date men who are homophobic, because they don't just hate your gay friends, they hate you too. All right, if you want us to read your tweet on a future episode of the Savage Lovecast, be sure to use the hashtag Savage Lovecast. And now your response calls.
Hi, this is for the caller on the last episode whose boyfriend like blew up over a home improvement project. And they've been together for 4 years. He's never done that before. I just want to, it kind of reminded me of myself one time. I was trying to fix our internet and I yelled at my sister, and it doesn't make the behavior excusable, but I just realized that for some reason that irritates the shit out of me and I turned into a dick. And I apologized, of course, and I just told her, I started telling her every time I was trying to fix something technology-wise, please don't talk to me. I'm going to be irrationally angry for the next half hour. So I don't know if he's done home improvement projects for them before, but maybe that's just his one thing that he could set off about. Because like I said, normally I'm pretty easygoing and I never raise my voice to anybody. But for some reason, like, it just pisses me off when I can't fix something. So it could be just as simple as that if he's never shown it before. See if he says that that's just like his one thing he gets mad about.
Hey, Dan. I had a quick problem with something that you mentioned in episode 667, where you implied that Lindsey Graham was only acting the way that he was because Trump or somebody had potentially blackmailing information on him. I don't think Lindsey Graham is a victim that's being blackmailed into acting in a way that he doesn't want to act. I think Lindsey Graham opposed Trump briefly when he thought it was politically expedient and is now showing his true colors as a white supremacist who is victimizing others and is not the victim of a blackmail scheme and an otherwise decent person who would be doing good if not for the blackmail against him.
And we're going to leave it there. 206-302-2064 is the number here at the Savage Lovecast. If you'd like to record a question or a comment for a future show, give us a buzz. 206-302-2064. Follow me on Twitter at FakeDanSavage. Follow Jacqueline Novak on Twitter at Jacqueline Novak. And get your butts down to the Cherry Lane Theater to see her show, Get On Your Knees. The Savage Lovecast is produced every week by Nancy Hartunian. And me and the tech savvy at Risky, Dan Nancy, will all be back at you next week for another installment of the Savage Lovecast. Thanks for downloading.